Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have got some big Blackhawks stuff to talk about. We've got Cubs talk, we've got White Sox talk, we got Bears talk, but first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the Stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. So make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, I think there's one team we should probably start talking about first.
Yeah.
So where were you when the news happened, when it all went down?
Okay, so sometimes my buddies and I that I grew up with in the neighborhood, when the weather gets nicer, we'll go on like after work walks or whatever. So shout out to my buddies, Eric and Brian. The three of us were just out walking in the neighborhood. My buddy Eric was walking his dog. We were enjoying the nice night. And, you know, I'm remembering, oh, yeah, the draft lottery is going on. So I'm kind of scrolling through Twitter as we're walking and talking. And then, you know, all of a sudden, Blackhawks are going to be top four. Blackhawks are going to be top three. Blackhawks are going to have one of the top two picks. And I start, you know, freaking out because here we are in a position to get a top premier pick when we didn't know what our odds were really going to be. I mean, obviously, we weren't going to have the worst odds, but we didn't have the best odds either. And as it is just ticking down and down and down, I'm thinking, are we actually going to do this? And I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, either way, even if we get top two, if we got the second pick and you got Adam Fantilli, okay, great. I'm like, is that the most I could realistically ask for? Then all of a sudden, Chicago wins the lottery. And I start yelling and the neighborhood could all hear it. My voice was echoing off the buildings. I was stunned. I had to rub my eyes. I had to keep scrolling and make sure what I saw was correct, because we just lucked out so insane with this pick. And I'm still speechless about it, like almost a week later.
Yeah, I actually thought the lottery was on Tuesday, and I don't know why in my head. I had the right date, but I just thought it was Tuesday. And so when I saw Monday morning, it was that day. And I'm like, okay, you know, don't get your hopes too up, because, you know, if they get that fifth pick, it's a tough draw. But I'm like, you know, they only got a 9.5% chance of getting that number one pick, which is not great odds. And then I totally lost track of time and I went, oh, the lottery's on. And I turned it on. And as I was turning it on, they already had down to the top two picks. And when they showed the card for the Blackhawks, I was like, oh, you know, it was an exciting moment.
I mean, that moment changed the course of this franchise. It really, really did. And I think that this is where you start to discuss how this changes the franchise. Because, look, you and I have talked about this. You need that rock to build your next great team. The Blackhawks, the past year, have really increased their farm stock, right? I mean, you know, drafting Korchinski and Nazar, and you know, you're starting to look at your farm system. You're like, okay, you know, you got those guys who are going to be growing in the organization over the next few years. And then you have Lucas Reichel coming up. You know, those are hopefully going to be good essential pieces for your team, but you need that superstar. I mean, look at all these teams out there. Like, look how quickly the Devils rebuilt. You know, they got Jack Hughes. You know, that was obviously their big get. And you look at all the other teams out there that have superstars that they built around. Connor McDavid on the Oilers and all the years of Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby on the Capitals and the Penguins. And then you go here, you had Toews and Kane all those years. Those were the guys you built around. And that, I think, is what the Blackhawks needed to really feel good about this going forward. And now they have that rock. They have a rock plus in Connor Bedard. And, you know, I don't really know if we look at this as this makes the rebuild faster in terms of just time, but I definitely think that it changes the outlook of this rebuild. The dynamic has changed. The long-term picture has gotten so much brighter. It might not necessarily mean that you shave off a year or two of the actual rebuild. Maybe it helps a little bit, but I think that when we look at how this changes the rebuild, it's less about the time and just more of the dynamic, how it actually is built.
Right. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's you're not going to make this rebuild happen faster, but it makes it a whole lot easier. You see a much more clear pathway to this rebuild. You know, Kyle Davidson has done a really good job of selling off pieces and building assets and reshaping how our farm system operates. And you start looking at our young talent and you're like, okay, all right, I'm starting to like where this is going. And then you look at the draft picks that they have, and you're like, okay, the Blackhawks have a lot of ammunition to start building this team going forward. And you're like, but you just need that one core centerpiece, and you've got that guy now. You have that guy, and it's not a, I mean, without Bedard, it is, I mean, you know, granted, it's still, he's still an unknown, you know, it's because he's never played in the NHL and he's a teenager, but you know, you have high expectations of him doing well, and you know, everybody else is still you know, a question mark that you may have high hopes for, like Korchinski and Nazar and Lucas Reichel. Like, we feel good about those guys, but until they actually come up and do it, you know, we felt good about a lot of other guys in the past with the Blackhawks. Once you get that one anchor, it makes everybody else's job so much easier to, you know, to step in. The pressure's not on you. You have, right. You have your ace, your guy.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if you listen to any of the interview that Kyle Davidson had with Mullion Haw earlier this week. Did you hear any of that?
I didn't. I read clips from it, but I, you know, I missed the actual interview.
Well, you know, he said a lot of things that I really liked. And one of the things he brought up is that he's going to kind of stick to his guns here, stick to the plan. Your vision has changed because of landing this generational talent, but the plan is going to remain. You're not going to suddenly go out and say, okay, well, you know, we're just going to try to sign a bunch of guys to contend next year. He's sticking to this plan. And I think that's a good thing. Now, what's also interesting is that he's not ruling out using some of those picks to do other things with. And I think that's good too, is that he's keeping his mind open. Like, he's sticking to a plan, but he's keeping his mind open on how to execute this plan. So he has a vision, he has a plan, he's sticking on a path, but he's not narrowing his mind on this path. I think those are all really good things.
Yeah, and I saw that he's you know, looking to potentially move up in the draft. And I think that's a smart thing. You know, he's got 11 picks. Are you going to make all 11 of those picks? Probably not. Might as well move up. We already know that in the first round, you're going to have the number one overall pick, the Connor Bedard pick. And then because the Lightning lost and Toronto lost, you know that your other first round pick is going to be number 19.
Yeah, and this draft is deep. There's a lot of talent here, and that's good. So these are high value picks, even, you know, even the later rounds, like there's value to these picks. Now, there's one thing we have to establish here, right? He's drafting Connor Bedard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no...
Somebody I work with is like, what if they thought about trading him? I was like, that would be stupid. There's not... Like, there's... What are you going to give up to get that pick? Nothing, not enough.
You don't pass on a guy like that.
You know, the real question is, I mean, you're taking Bedard. That's given, whatever June, whatever the draft is.
Yeah.
You're taking Bedard. The question then becomes, you've got a ton of money that you need to spend to hit the cap floor. And, you know, Kyle Davidson said he's sticking to the plan, but I don't think any of us know what the plan is. And, you know, is he going to try to bring in some veterans to maybe not to compete, but to, you know, at least be respectable? Or is it to, you know, to keep building assets and then, you know, build through your prospect pool?
Well, I think that you bring in some veterans to round out some spots on the roster. I mean, you're going to have to. I think that you bring in guys that you kind of like that fits in with your coaching philosophy that you have with Luke Richardson.
Max Domi.
Bring him back. Honestly, yeah. Bring him back.
Anastasio.
I mean, you could. I think that you can, you're not going, like, I don't think you're going to make a trade for some blockbuster move, but I think, like, on the free agent market, you can go out and find a number of guys where you say, okay, you know, this kind of fits in with our philosophy. This is going to help develop Connor Bedard and others. And it might give you the opportunity to be like, hey, listen, you're not going to be a contender, but you can at least be somewhat competitive. I mean, the nice thing is that we saw a team that was completely dismantled still play at a competitive level, even if they weren't winning. You know, they weren't losing a lot of those games just completely helplessly. They were losing a lot of those games because of the lack of talent, but you at least saw what Luke Richardson was doing with this team, playing hard, playing smart, and just a system that makes sense. You saw that, but when you have a bunch of AHL guys out there, you're not going to win a lot of games. So if you at least go out and improve your roster, you bring in some more veterans, you could be like, hey, listen, this is a good starting point where we can build a little more respectability. You could help develop Connor Bedard, fill these spots for now, keep developing through your farm system. Maybe you find a guy or two that can be like a piece that could stick around for a few years. I think you're going to see, you know, your decent handful of, you know, 1 year deals, kind of like what we saw last year, but a little more on a competitive edge. But, you know, like I said, I have zero expectations for them being a contender next year, but just more watchable.
I hope they continue to weaponize their salary cap space. I think that would be a really smart move for them to take on bad contracts or, you know, I think the sweet spot is players that are decent, just overpaid, and take on those contracts. You know, you look at Tavo. Tavo was a sweetener to take on the Bickle contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if the Blackhawks, they've got a ton of cap space that they have to use to hit the cap floor. If they continue to do that and take on these bad contracts, and, you know, you're rounding out roster, using your space, cap space, and still getting more assets.
Right. No, totally. Totally. I think they do some of that stuff as well.
You know, because you've got an actual metric shit ton of draft capital this year. You've got the number one pick, the number 19 pick, and 4 second rounders.
Yeah, they're loaded.
You're going to be able to add young talent, and the young talent is going to be really good. in this class, if nothing else, Connor Bedard. And, you know, I think your goal, if you're Davidson, is you want to make sure that you have a good line for Bedard to play on next year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you want something that will help him develop. You don't just want to be putting guys off the streets out there next year. I mean, this is the other great thing about this coming season. We don't have to worry about tanking. We don't have to worry about what our draft odds are going to be. But you're not going to have that pressure of being a contender either. This is just, okay, this is your next step in the rebuild. We bottomed out. We dug the foundation. We now poured the concrete of this foundation. And guess what? You know what you're going to do now is you're just going to keep building forward.
Yeah. You know, but it's a, when you start thinking about the, what lines you could have or line mates you could have for Connor Bedard, it starts to get a little fun. Because you're like, oh, hey, you know, what about Vladimir Tarasenko? I know it's a pipe dream, but just hypothetically speaking, and you have a line of Lucas Reichel, Connor Bedard, and Vladimir Tarasenko. And just imagine Reichel's trying to fish out a puck from the corner and makes a nice pass to either Bedard or Tarasenko, you know, for who are two of the best shooters in or world-class shooters. It's just sweet to think about. You know, it's not going to happen, but that would be real nice.
Yeah, I mean, Vladdy is a free agent, but he's probably going to want to sign with a contender, right?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
There's another thing, too, we have to quickly just bring up again. Kane isn't coming back.
No.
That chapter is closed.
And honestly, is depending on what he does with his hip surgery, I don't know. I mean, he might do one of those things where he comes in later in the season and
right,
and then just, you know, is a bounty hunter almost for another cup.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, aren't they supposed to find that out fairly soon?
What he's going to do with his hip?
Right.
I have not heard any news, but yeah, I mean, so he's not coming back, and is as much as it would be cool to see him come back and play with Bedard and end his career as a Blackhawk, it's just sort of done.
It's done, and I think that's okay. Yeah. Honestly, I think that's okay. I like the fact that Davidson isn't married to anything from the previous era. I like the fact that he wants to build his vision. I'm totally cool with that.
So I'm looking at an article here from The Athletic about candidates to be line mates with Bedard. And they have like broken down into their internal candidates. So it has Tyler Johnson, Kurashev, Taylor Radish, Lucas Reichel, external candidates, Andreas Anastasio, Tyler Bertuzzi, JT Compher, Max Domi, Alex Killorn, Ryan O'Reilly, and James Van Riemsdyk. And then they even threw for fun Phil Kessel.
Oh man, I could totally see that happening though.
Phil Kessel.
Yeah. Man, yeah, because like, you know, I'm looking at the free agents right now, and you know, James Van Riemsdyk's still playing, huh?
You know, he's not that old. He's 34.
Yeah, I mean, though, it seems like he's been playing forever.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. But you know, when you look at his age, you're like, it's not that old.
He's
not a spring
age.
Chicken. Yeah, he's not a spring chicken, but he's not old either.
Well, I mean, you know, how old is hockey years? And I know there are guys that play into like their 40 age, but you know, with how quick and intense the game is now and all these playoff games and series, you know, it's gotta be hard after you eclipse the 30 mark when you have a lot of miles on you.
Oh yeah. I mean, the name of the game now is speed.
Right.
So, you know, you start losing that at a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you look at what Alex or James Van Riemsdyk has done. He's been around over a decade. He's been around a long time. And, you know, obviously we don't know if Taze is going to play next year. He's been around over a decade. Same with Kane. And I'm just looking at some of these other free agents. I mean, Kyle Okposo, he's 35. Matt Dumba is only 28. Feels like he's been around longer. Eric Johnson. Eric Johnson's a free agent, 35 years old. Jonathan Quick is 37. We need to pick up a veteran goaltender.
Isn't DeBrincat a free agent?
Restricted free agent.
Just saying.
Just, a lot of people have brought up DeBrincat.
I mean, it's not a bad idea.
I mean, I wouldn't hate having him back.
Just depends on what kind of contract he's looking at.
Right. Because I don't think Davidson's going to want to pour out too much at this point.
I mean, you got to pour out something.
You do, but it's going to depend on what he wants.
Yeah. Looking at the Blackhawks have a ton of cap space.
Shit you'd never say with Stan Bowman around.
Yeah, I know. He'd have to trade the Connor Bedard pick because he'd be over the cap.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know, I'm looking at, you know, like I said, I was looking at the free agent list here, and I'm looking at most points scored by each of these free agents, and DeBrincat was second. Now, him and Brott are both restricted free agents. Timo Meier from the Devils, he had the most goals. He's tied for second, really. He's got 66 as well as DeBrincat. You know, Vince Dunn, he's up there, 64 points. Pierre-Luc Dubois. Patrice Bergeron, who's, you know, he's, yeah, didn't make it out of the first round. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you do have some names as free agents. It's just going to be interesting to see how Davidson attacks this.
Yeah, let's see. What's the cap floor for this year?
NHL for this year.
Cap floor.
So it looks like the confirmed salary cap for 2022-2023, as expected, is 82.5. The payroll range for rebuilding teams, salary cap floor is at 61, while midpoint is 71.7. Because, I mean, really, who are the Blackhawks paying, like, outside Seth Jones?
So they've got to spend over 60 million, and they're at 37 million.
Yeah. So they got space.
They've got space to spend. Let's see. Seth Jones, they're paying Tyler Johnson just under 5. Nikita Zaitsev, 2.5. Connor Murphy, 5.8. Peter Mrazek, 4.4. Jason Dickinson, 3.25. And then everybody else is like around a million or less.
Yeah, it's like Seth Jones and a few little others.
So yeah, you don't really have anybody.
Yeah, I mean, everybody from the old era is off the books now. You remember all those big contracts, Taze, Kane, Keith Seabrook, all gone.
And if you look at the 2024-2025, so not this coming season, the season after, their books are Connor Murphy, Seth Jones, and Wyatt Kaiser.
Wow.
And so they have to spend like $50 million to get to the floor.
So Ryan Poles and Kyle Davidson are flexing in front of each other, seeing who has the most respective cap space.
I mean, it's true. You know, they're both really managing the cap situation really well.
Yeah, I mean, think about, you know, you combine both the Bears and the Blackhawks over the past year or so, and you think about how many guys have been traded away, just stripping both teams down to the studs. You know, Ryan Poles trades away Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn and Roquan Smith. The Blackhawks trade away Patrick Kane and, you know, a lot of the guys you signed this offseason on short-term deals like Max Domi. And then obviously, you know, Taze leaves and he's not coming back. So it wasn't a trade, but you parted ways with him. So, I mean, all these big names on both teams over the past year or so, I mean, the houses have been cleared.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely right down to the studs. And honestly, it's the easiest way to build the way you want.
Yes.
You know, it's one thing if you had like, you think about a house, like if you have like the Penguins have been able to retool a lot of times because they had a really strong foundation. Mm-hmm. You had a veteran like Sidney Crosby, who's making a lot of money, but he performs every year with Jonathan Taves, especially over the last few years, you know, he wasn't there, wasn't playing, or he wasn't playing well, and he's making up a lot of cap. Your foundation wasn't there. But the Penguins, like with Malkin and Crosby, you had a foundation there. You could build around them.
Right.
And, you know, with the Blackhawks, the foundation wasn't there. You needed to just strip it all down and build the foundation exactly how you want and how you foresee things. And that's what they're doing. And, you know, this was a painful, is, you know, even though the record was bad this year, it wasn't nearly as painful. It was painful, but it wasn't nearly as painful as the last couple years of the Jeremy Colleton era.
Oh no, that was 10 times worse, because at least this year, one, you knew what was going on, and two, Kyle Davidson had the team performing, you know, playing well, even if they weren't winning a lot of games. I mean, the Colleton era, it was miserable. Everything was just a muck. And, you know, obviously there was the dark cloud hanging over the organization, which, you know, obviously affected, I think, the mood of everybody, rightfully so. But even just the play itself on the ice was just really bad. And the fact that it was more fun to watch a team full of who are you guys under Luke Richardson, you know, go back to October 21, when that team got off to a really, really horrid start. You still had Taze and Kane. You had Marc-Andre Fleury in net. You still had Alex DeBrincat. You still had some of those other, you know, depth pieces that you had. You brought in Tyler Johnson. You brought in Seth Jones. You were trying to at least be competitive, and you looked all but competitive. This year, at certain points, you didn't remember who the hell half the guys were, but you at least watched something competitive, because those late Jeremy Colleton days, that wasn't competitive. That wasn't just losing. I mean, that was just helplessness. Big difference. If you sit down and watch the games, it's a big difference. And frankly, I'm still surprised thinking about this last Hawks season and thinking, you know, this isn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. Now, obviously, if you were looking to be good this year and they played at this level, it would have been really, really bad. But considering where our expectations were, like, I'm like, okay, we're in for like a historically terrible season. And it was far from good, but it's like, man, this is at least watchable at times. This is at least where you see a vision. This is at least a team that plays hard. You can appreciate that stuff. Like, it was better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, there wasn't a good team, but they played hard. They played smart, and you knew what they were doing. admitted, like, the Bears this year were frustrating. You knew what they were doing. It, at least, you know, when the offense was started clicking towards the end of the season, you know, you were like, okay, I can watch this. I can see the future. It just makes it a lot easier. But
put this in perspective. Watching the Bears go 3-13 with Justin Fields in this new vision, and watching Luke Richardson coach a bunch of guys from the AHL. That was, they were both more fun than watching the end of the Ryan Pace era and the end of the Stan Bowman era. And those rosters, both at the end of those eras on paper, were better. Right?
Yeah. I'm just thinking, what? So the Bears had the number one overall pick,
mm-hmm. and
they traded it away, but they had it.
Right.
The Blackhawks have the number one overall pick. They're not mm-hmm. going to trade it. They're going to keep it.
Right.
What if the Bulls also get the number one pick?
Yeah, I am not setting myself up for hopes. I mean,
I'm not either. I don't even. They're not, but. Man, it would just be fun to watch the chuds on Twitter lose their minds.
Oh, I mean, it would be absolute chaos. Absolute chaos. If you had three Chicago teams get the first pick, because two of those three picks are lotteries. The Bears, there's no lottery in the NFL. But the fact that the Bears were able to maneuver their way into being in a position to get that pick by completely tanking that final game, not even starting Justin Fields, you know, that's one thing, but getting the luck of the draw twice. And it's one thing for the NHL draft, but the Bulls' odds to get the first overall are like what, 1%, like right around there.
The Bulls?
Yeah.
Tiny. Tankathon. What is Tankathon telling me? 1.8%.
Yeah, that's tiny. That's just under 2%.
Yeah, that is not good. But to get a top four pick, 8.5%. Not great, but a lot better than 1.8.
If honestly, if we get a top four pick, I'll be ecstatic about that.
Yeah, so the draft lottery is on Tuesday. So, you know, our next show we'll be able to talk about Victor Wembanyama and Connor Bedard in Chicago.
The United Center, the future of the United Center.
Oh my God. People would just be losing their minds. They're already losing their minds about the Blackhawks winning the lottery.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I honestly don't care. Let them whine. Let them complain. We'll be talking about Connor Bedard.
Yeah, and I'm like, look, I'm not going to act like we didn't completely luck into this. I'm not, but I'm going to obviously enjoy watching him on my team.
We skilled into it. It was a skillful.
I still think, Sean, you were the one that went to the draft lottery when no one was looking. You took all the ping pong balls out, and you took like a Sharpie, and you just blacked out every team and just sloppily wrote Hawks.
I drew a stick figure Indian head. but I don't know if you saw, there was EA Sports did a simulation of Connor Bedard's career.
Yes.
So it's so amazing and doesn't seem realistic, but I'm going to take it as realistic. So in this simulation, they played out the career of Connor Bedard. He ends up playing 1,455 games, scores 739 goals, which I believe would put him fourth all time.
Oh my goodness.
Scoring 1,145 assists, which I believe is fourth all time. And with a total of 1,884 points, which I think puts it at third all time. They have him winning the Calder trophy for his rookie of the year, four Hart trophies, four Ted Lindsay awards, 2 Rocket Richard Awards, and 3 Stanley Cups.
All right. Cool.
if that is his career, that is amazing. That would just be absolutely amazing.
You know, there was, I can't remember who said it, but there was a hockey expert who was on the radio, and I believe he said that he saw the floor of Connor Bedard being Sergei Fedorov. If he hits the floor and he's like Sergei Fedorov, it's pretty damn good, right?
You know, I see a lot of people are saying Connor McDavid, he's like a Connor McDavid. And I get the comparison because just both child prodigies and, you know, those everywhere they've gone, their numbers have been similar at every stage. But really, I see Sidney Crosby, except not a dick.
Emphasis on that part.
I mean, the skill wise, like he's just ridiculous. I'm so excited to see him next year. I've never owned the red Blackhawks jersey, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a Connor Bedard red Blackhawks jersey.
The meatball sauce will blend right in with it.
Oh, that's what it's for. It's when I bathe myself in meatball sauce, nobody can see the stains.
I just want to read you something real quick here. His stats in the WHL last year. Have you seen them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to read it for our listeners. He played in 57 games. He tallied 143 points.
Wait. Pause real quick. How old was he?
17. 71 goals, 72 assists. Now, the playoffs, that was just regular season. 7 games, 20 points, 10 goals, 10 assists. Over the last 2 years in regular season WHL play, he scored 243 points.
Jesus.
Yeah. Insane. There's one more aspect we have to talk about this, though, Sean. Did you see the numbers of the season ticket holders?
Yes. I haven't seen a final tally, but as they were coming in, just the sheer numbers, like it was like a, like $2 million worth of tickets within like a couple of hours after the draft lottery.
That's insane. And I said this on the show and I'll say it now that it's come to fruition. That stadium is going to be filled. Those people are going to go out to see him. Even if the team isn't that good, people will go to see him play.
You know, there was actually a good number of people at the games last year when they were terrible and didn't have any stars.
Yeah, they drew better than I thought they were going to last year. I mean, I thought that we were going to be, I don't want to say quite the Bill Wirtz era, but I thought there were going to be some nights where we'd be like, okay, maybe 13,000-ish. But for what they were, I really thought that they drew pretty well.
Connor Bedard last year scored 100 goals in 83 games across the World Juniors, the WHL, and the NHL Prospect Games. 100 goals in 83 games.
You know what this means, though? These tickets are going to be hot. Yeah. So, you know, I did enjoy at least 2 years of being able to say, hey, I can get some pretty nice cheap tickets. This might not be the case as much.
What's even funnier, though, about the Blackhawks winning is the Vancouver Canucks were one number away from winning the lottery.
Wow. If I was a Canucks fan, I would be so pissed.
Yeah, the winning NHL draft combo was 4, 5, 9, 13. The Canucks had 4, 5, 9, 12.
You know, funny story. My grandmother back in the 80s, it was like the same situation. she was one number away from winning like the Illinois Lotto, like the Mega Millions or whatever. And she didn't get it, but she still got like a nice chunk of change in compensation for it. So, you know, she took like the whole family out to a nice dinner. It's just kind of funny. It was like literally the same situation, like just one single number off from winning it all.
They would have been, the Canucks were the lowest team that could move up to the number one overall spot because they would move up to 10. That's the max you can move up. So they were one number away from winning it. He's probably a little pissed because that's his hometown team, but you know what?
Sure.
He's going to wear the Indian head and he's going to realize that Chicago's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, Bedard, we're going to have to introduce you to a few things. You're just going to lay it out on a table. This is tavern style square cut pizza. This is Chicago deep dish pizza. This is Italian beef. This is Italian sausage. This is an Italian sausage beef combo. This is Italian ice. And this right here is a Chicago hot dog and a pull of sausage.
And this down here at the Chicago River is Chonkosaurus, our giant snapping turtle.
Now, Chonkosaurus might look intimidating, but Connor Bedard could take him.
Have you seen the pictures of Chonkosaurus?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Chonkosaurus. So much better than Chance the Snapper.
Yeah, that was a thing for like 10 days, and then it's kind of everyone just forgot about it.
So when's the NHL actual draft? When's the day we officially have? The draft is in 46 days. It's a long time before I can get my Connor Bedard jersey.
That's a long wait between the lottery and the draft. But hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's June 28th. Where is the draft? The draft is in Nashville. Now that gets me, that gets the juices flowing.
Oh, you're thinking about going, aren't you?
I'm thinking about going.
Well, that's what you want to do.
I'm off of work.
When did you say that date was?
June 28th.
Ideas are ripping through Sean's head.
They really are. I'm already off work that week. Just happenstance. And we were talking about going to Mammoth Cave, but what if we do Mammoth Cave earlier in the week and then swing up through Nashville?
He's making edits to his vacation plans mid-show.
I really am. Just have my Connor Bedard jersey there.
Screw it, man. Don't even tell your family. Just be like, Sean, isn't this the tourniquet off where we're going? We're going to Nashville. What? Yeah, that's right. We're going to Nashville. Why? Because the NHL draft is there. Why? Because I want to see Connor Bedard get drafted and get his jersey. That's why.
Duh.
I mean, doy. I mean, what do you think? We were going to go to Nashville to go to some country bar? Really?
All right. Where do you want to swing from here?
Well, I was hoping that you and I can break down this 2023 Bears schedule.
All right. So the Bears schedule came out on Thursday, and for the first year in several years, it didn't leak early.
No, it did not.
We had a couple games leak early because other teams that they were playing schedule got leaked, like the Packers. Mm-hmm. But
they were leaked early.
Yeah, they were, like the Packers got leaked early. So we knew two games. I think the Washington team leaked early. So we knew that one, but for the most part, we didn't know exactly what was happening. And, it's based on the schedule, I think the NHL or the NHL, the NFL might think the Bears have some legs. They've got a Monday night game. They've got a couple Thursday night games.
Sunday night game against the Chargers.
Yeah. I think the NFL thinks that they might have some legs.
And there's two TBDs, the week 18 versus the Packers and the week 15 versus the Browns. There is potential for those to be flexed into primetime spots.
Yeah. So the schedule as it is they start week one against Green Bay Packers, which I hate. Then at Tampa, at Kansas City, home against Denver, at Washington on a Thursday, home against Minnesota, home against the Raiders, at the Chargers, at the Saints, home against Carolina, at Detroit, at Minnesota, bye week, home against Detroit, at Cleveland, home against Arizona, home against Atlanta, and then go to Green Bay to wrap up this regular season.
Yeah, so, you know, there's another note here too. There was rumors that the Bears were going to play the Chiefs in Germany. That's not happening. And honestly, thank goodness that's not happening.
Yeah. There's a couple of quirky things in this schedule. So they've got two Thursday night games. So they have a short week. And one of them sort of really sucks is because they're at New Orleans and then on a Sunday, and then they play Carolina on a Thursday. I mean, for the next game, you end up with like a mini bye because you get a 10 days between games, but you know, those shortened weeks kind of suck.
Yeah. I will say this is the bye is fairly late, but I'd rather have a fairly late bye than one that's super early.
Right. You know, you really would like it right in the middle, like week 10, but, right. You know, it's,
if you had to choose between late or early, I'm taking late.
Yeah. So honestly, the schedule is not too bad.
So, you know, Sean, this is one of those things where you think about a team on paper, just purely on paper, where their talent is, but when you go into an NFL season, there's always got to be those second evaluations that you do because, you know, NBA, NHL, you play everybody. That never changes. Now in baseball, you play everybody. And in baseball, you play 162 games. You know, it's different every year in the NFL. You don't play everybody. Your opponents are different every year outside your division. And it's also very important to keep in mind where the games are and when they are. So the way you think about a team on paper, and then you look at your schedule, I think it's easy to kind of overestimate on a schedule because in my mind, I'm thinking around 7 wins for the Bears next year, just kind of where they're at right now. But then you look at the schedule and, you know, you obviously don't proclaim any absolute lockdown wins, but look at the opponents, you know, Tampa Bay without Tom Brady. Winnable game at the, you know, versus the Broncos, winnable game at the Commanders, winnable game versus the Raiders at home, winnable game versus the Panthers at home, winnable game versus the Cardinals at home, winnable game versus the Falcons at home, winnable game. You look at a number of these non-division games and you're like, you know, there's a fairly amount of manageable opponents just thinking right here on paper. Really, what it's going to be about is how well you're going to do against your own division. Because if you at least have a 500 record against your division and get at least one win against each team, then you have a more of an opportunity to take advantage of those other opponents and, you know, maybe squeak into the playoffs here. Because, you know, it's fairly manageable. There are a few games where you look at like, okay, Kansas City, you're probably not winning that one. Going to the Saints, that's going to be pretty hard. At the Browns, probably going to be pretty hard.
Saints were doo-doo sandwich last year.
They weren't good. They weren't good, but that is a tough place to play.
It is. I'm But you know, do you want to go through game by game and
let's do that. Let's do
it. All right. Week one, home against Green Bay.
Sean, here's my meatball take. I think that's a must win. I think that is your chance right there, right now, to flip the script of this rivalry.
It's a total.
Aaron Rodgers is gone. Justin Fields has his weapons. Flip the damn script right then and there. Don't give Green Bay or Jordan Love any idea that Jordan Love can now own the Bears. Put your foot down, make a statement.
I mean, offensively, I don't have high expectations of Green Bay. Defensively, they probably should be pretty solid.
Agreed.
I'm still picking Green Bay in this one because until the Bears can do it, I'm not predicting them to do it.
I usually go with you, and I kind of want to go with you there, but I'm going to go optimistic and say the Bears are going to win that one. I could totally see them losing. Don't get me wrong, but I'll go with the optimistic pick.
Anything could happen in these games. That's the NFL.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, the one thing with, you know, you look at the schedule now and you're basing this on what they were last year plus what they did on paper. And you just make projections. But, you know, who knows? Like, you could look and be like, oh man, no way they're beating Kansas City. But, you know, what if Patrick Mahomes tears his ACL and is out?
Sure, sure.
That becomes a really winnable game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's anything happens. So week two, going to Tampa Bay.
I think you win that one.
I think you win that one. That defense is older. That their quarterback situation is not good. I think that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
Week three, going to Kansas City.
Loss.
Week four, home against Denver.
If we're going to see the Denver we saw last year, that's a win. But they're going to have a new head coach. And if things get figured out there, then Denver is obviously going to be a very worthy opponent. If not, the Bears can beat them.
I like that they're playing Denver early.
Yes.
Because it's having a new system, new head coach. It's going to take some time. And I think it's going to take a little bit for Russell Wilson to get in the groove with a new head coach. But Sean Payton's going to have this team cooking by the end of the season, I think. So it's good that they get them early.
I'm going to say close loss right now.
I'm going to say close loss as well. Week five, going to Washington on a Thursday night.
I think they win that one.
I think they win that one too. I'm not that impressed by Washington.
Neither am I.
The Bears played them last year, literally played one of the worst games they could have possibly played and still almost pulled the game out.
Hey, think about this. The whole course of Chicago sports could have been changed if Darnell Mooney crosses the goal line and Jonathan Toews finishes that overtime breakaway goal.
Right?
Yeah.
So I have them winning Washington. Week six, Minnesota in Chicago.
I think that's a loss.
I think that's a win.
If they don't have pass rush and they can't get to Cousins, I think that's trouble.
I think that's a team on the decline.
I mean, I think so too. If they had any pass rush, I would say that's a win.
I'm going win.
Okay.
Week seven, Las Vegas.
I think they can win that. I think they can stop Jimmy G.
Yeah, I'm not. I think they win. Week eight at the Chargers.
Loss.
I'm going win. I'm not a believer in the Chargers at this point.
Okay.
I like their quarterback. I just don't think that they've put a winning team around him.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that could be a really good game. I just think that there's going to be that point where Herbert makes the big play on our defense. And it's just, that's the backbreaker.
I mean, it's possible. We're doing this mid-May.
We're going to be doing this again in a few months. And then again, right before the season starts.
Oh, absolutely. But this is the fun that we saw the schedule. We kind of get a feel here.
Yep.
Then they go from the Chargers to New Orleans. I'm saying win.
That's a tough place to play. But I think I kind of want to say close loss, but I'm going to say they're going to squeak out a win. Let's go with that. They'll squeak out a win. It's going to be a field goal as time expires.
All right. Then back home on a short rest against the Panthers.
I think that's going to be a win, but I think they're going to put up a bigger fight than we're going to expect.
I think so too, but I think they'll win a game. The Carolina team is not as bad as people think.
No, it's not.
You know, Bryce Young, I think it's going to be really good if he stays healthy. It's just, man, did you see the video of him taking snaps during the first?
I did.
He's so little.
Yeah, yeah.
My only concern, literally, like, I think he's off the charts football IQ.
Agreed.
He knows where to go. He knows how to read the defense. He's got a good enough arm for most throws. There's nothing about him that says he's not going to make it other than he's just little.
He was like 8 inches taller.
8 inches. If he was 4 inches taller.
Yeah.
Like if you put him in the body of Anthony Richardson.
Oh my God.
This would be the most elite quarterback that you could imagine having.
We would be like talking Trevor Lawrence type hype.
I think you'd be more than that. I think this would be John Elway coming out of the draft hype.
All right.
Like, or Peyton Manning, like you would just be like, this is the guy. I think the Bears would have really thought about about trading Justin Fields.
Yeah.
But he's just so little. But the Panthers, I think they're going to have rookie quarterback growing pains that are going to keep them from being as good as they could be. The defense is good. You know, they don't have a number one receiver anymore. And, you know, they have a rookie quarterback. I think they'll be in that division. They'll compete, but I don't think they're that good. After that, going to Detroit on
loss.
10 days after it'll be a 10 day bye or a 10 day break.
Loss.
I'm going to say loss, but I think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah, I just, if you can't get to Jared Goff, you're probably giving up 40 plus.
Then they get a bye. And then after that, Minnesota at Minnesota.
I'm going loss. I think this is going to be the last year where the Vikings sweep us and then it'll be over.
I think it's a split. The home team wins both games. I'll have them lose. Then they have the bye week. Then Detroit comes to Chicago.
I'll give them a win in that one.
I'm going to go win. Then they go to Cleveland. I'm going to say loss.
I'm going to say loss too.
I think Cleveland's going to be good this year.
Finally. I think so too. Now, if they weren't, would you be surprised? No, I wouldn't be, but I do think they are going to be better than last year.
Well, last year they were not good, but I think having a whole season or whole off season with your rapist quarterback and you know, the additions you made to the team, think that's going to make it go far, but I think the Browns will be a playoff caliber team.
Yeah.
Then Arizona comes to Chicago.
Win.
That's a win. I think that team is a disaster.
Yeah.
Then Atlanta comes to Chicago.
I think you win that one too.
I think you win that one. And then you go to Green Bay.
Loss.
So let's see.
That's not for anything.
I have them with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have them 10-7.
A lot of people I saw on Twitter had the same thing.
I mean, there's a lot of winnable games in here. I mean, Detroit is a good team. I'm not shitting on them, but they don't have an elite quarterback, and it makes it a lot harder because I don't believe in Jared Goff's ability to bring you back if you're in a hole.
My question is, my honest question, are the Lions for real? Because I think they are, but is it possible that we see them just completely regress next year? Like, are teams going to figure them out? Now, the advantage the Lions have is a good offensive line. When you have a good offensive line, that makes how you play a lot more efficient. But are they going to be able to do what they did last year? I honestly don't know. What does kind of scare me a little bit about them is not as much their quarterback, but I think their ground game is going to be pretty good. If you have a line, and listen, I told you I like David Montgomery. I think he's a perfectly solid back, but if you have a good system and a line that can block, he's going to do some pretty solid things there.
Well, and you drafted a running back in the first round.
Yeah. So you have him and your new running back. So if they're going to control the clock against you, and if you can't stop the run, that's big trouble.
That is true. That is true. But I mean, yeah, that's the beauty of playing a last place schedule in a division that is completely changing.
If Detroit wasn't good, I would say this is a golden opportunity. I just don't think they're better than Detroit yet.
Maybe not, but Minnesota is regressing.
They are regressing. I'm just not sure if the Bears are ready to beat them. Cause like I said, my big fear is that if you're not going to get pressure on Kirk Cousins, as good as I think our secondary is going to be, when you got Justin, you throw it to Justin Jefferson and he could do some good things. If you give time in the pocket for Kirk Cousins and he's finding Justin Jefferson, they could put some points on you. The good news is I think you'll be able to put points on them.
With Za'Darius Smith is gone,
which is a big loss.
And Dalvin Cook, the rumors are not regular fan rumors, but like the beat writers from, you know, that write about the Vikings said Dalvin Cook is about to be cut.
So there should be another huge loss.
There'll be no Dalvin Cook. Their offensive line is okay.
It's not great. It's not bad.
And you know, so I think they're a beatable team.
I think they are too. Don't get me wrong. I think they are too. I just wish the Bears had more pass rush. I just think you're going to need that in some of these games.
Well, you bring up the pass rush, and they brought in another edge rusher, Walker from the Titans. And Ryan Poles has pretty much told us exactly what he plans to do.
He did.
And he's very transparent, and he just said that he's, you know, that he pretty much going to trade for a veteran pass rusher. So I foresee the Bears bringing in another edge rusher, and that's, you know, with that, I think it gives you a lot better than what they had last year as far as pass rushing. And if the two rookie defensive tackles give you what I think they can give you, then suddenly, you know, you don't have to worry so much about the edge rush because they're collapsing the pocket from the middle and driving the, you know, the center backwards. That's a real possibility. Jerron Dexter, I've been watching film, and my biggest knock on him was he just slow off the snap. But when I hear him talk about, oh yeah, that was what, you know, he was asked to do in Florida, and the Bears are going to ask him to do something completely different. They want him to be quick off the ball and just wreak havoc in the center of the offensive line. You know, that I'm like, okay, I watched him do really well. It was just that slow step. And I like the Pickens pick. I think you've got something. I mean, I don't know if you'll see it right off the bat, but I think I'm liking what these guys are going to do. And, you know, the Bears staff is basically telling you that, hey, this Jerron Dexter could be the Chris Jones that, you know, the all pro defensive lineman that really drives thing. And if that's the case, then it's going to make everything a lot easier for your edge rushers, because it's a lot harder to, it's a lot easier to stop an edge rusher because you can chip them, you can roll protections, you know, roll the play away from them or run directly at them. When you're causing pressure from the center, like from the middle of the offensive line and those defensive tackle spots, it's real hard because, you know, you can double team them, but then that creates one-on-ones elsewhere, and you're really susceptible to a blitz at that point. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this defensive line. I still don't know how they're going to do against stopping the run, but I think the pass rush is not going to be anywhere near as bad. I think it's going to be decent.
If they make a few more moves, then I might be singing a different tune. And I get everything that you're saying. I think that's all valid. I don't know. It makes me a little nervous. And, you know, maybe that's just because we've been spoiled with elite pass rushing during the Ryan Pace era. One of the few good things that was done well, you know, when you had Khalil Mack and you had Robert Quinn. I mean, obviously it was an elite level. And last year it was the worst in football. You had the fewest sacks in football, and, you know, you've made improvements already. To beat certain quarterbacks in certain teams, it needs to be better than meh. That's just what worries me.
Who knows? We'll see what they bring in, because, you know, I have no idea who's on the trade block or who's,
guys can still be cut.
There's still guys on the market. I know Bears Twitter is clamoring for Yannick, but he's just so bad against the run. I don't know if it's worthy, because he's gonna command a decent amount of money, and he's just so bad against the run.
And you think Ryan Poles would go for that kind of thing?
No.
Someone who's very emphasizing on beating you in the trenches.
And I don't think, as much as I think Jadeveon Clowney could be good, based on some of the comments that Ryan Poles has made, which were directed about Jalen Carter, where he talked about character matters and the type of team he has is not ready to take on those character issues. So he's basically saying, this is a young team. This is a team that doesn't have an identity yet.
We're building an identity and a culture.
Yeah. You can't test those waters this early on. And Jadeveon Clowney, for as good as he is, what happened last year in Cleveland was a really bad look where he quit on the team.
Right.
Bad look.
Yeah.
And I think that's the concern, is you can't have that. You can't have a veteran quit on a team if things don't go well with the Bears this
season. And it is hard to kind of play the character card and then bring in Clowney, because then you're going to have people asking a lot of questions. Like, oh, you know, Jalen Carter wasn't worth going after, but Clowney was.
I mean, different types of things.
But still, I think about it.
But I agree with you. I agree with you is that if you're going to make these comments, he's probably not the guy, especially since, you know, you're not expecting double digit sacks from him.
Right.
Granted,
right.
He's a very good run defender. But
you need to get to the quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still not writing it off, but I would be shocked.
Right. And
I agree. The fact that you're considering trading for somebody when he's available and he doesn't count toward anything, like he doesn't count in the, at this point in the calculation for compensatory picks, he's just there. You just cost money. And the fact that they haven't brought him in does speak volumes. And so I just don't know who is available for trade at this point. And I'm sure he's been on the horn. That Za'Darius Smith trade, that they did not give up a ton for him.
No, they did not. That was pretty like, wow. Because the compensation wasn't higher than like, what, a fourth rounder?
Wasn't it a fifth and a sixth or something?
Something like, it was not a lot.
Let's look it up quick. The Browns will receive Za'Darius Smith. And so the Vikings are sending Za'Darius Smith, 2025 sixth round pick and a 2025 seventh round pick. And the Vikings are getting two fifth rounders. So they're giving up two fifth rounders, but getting Za'Darius Smith, a sixth and a seventh.
That's not a haul.
No, that is not a haul at all. Yeah. So that wouldn't have been a bad move for the Bears, but I don't think, and I would normally say the Vikings would not make that move
in division, trade in division.
But the Vikings new GM, he's already traded within the division for at the draft and last year, and a favorable draft or a trade to the other team. Like, so who knows? I just don't know who's on the trade market. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think we're going to find some answers pretty soon, honestly.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, you would like to have that trade done before the veteran minicamp comes up, and definitely before training camp, but you'd like to wrap this up soon and have that player in your house and, you know, meeting the team and being ready to jump in, because the more time you have in your building and learning your plays and learning your coaching staff and the style of play, that's all better for your team.
Right. Exactly.
And the only other bit of Bears news I have is Phil Emery retired.
Yes, he did.
I didn't really follow
his career after the Bears, but yeah.
I didn't even know he was still involved in the NFL. So that's funny. When they brought in Ryan Pace?
Correct. Because he was fired after the 2014 season. So and then both, they brought in Pace in 15.
So both Pace and Emery worked for the Falcons after that?
They together? Did. Yep. Yeah. And then Ryan, what did the Falcons do? Get a bunch of former Bears.
How funny would that be to work with the guy that you got fired and replaced by, and then you both got fired, and then you worked at the same new place?
Well, at least I, Ryan Pace, took the team to the playoffs a few times.
But you hired a boner offensive minded coach that can't coach offense, just like me.
Better than hiring someone from the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, but my Canadian guy still was better than your bald guy.
My bald guy won us a division.
On the back of your defensive coordinator that you inherited.
Doesn't matter. Still a division title, biatch.
I'm just picturing Ryan Pace calling Phil Emery a biatch.
That would be a funny visual, wouldn't it? But you have trouble visualizing it because you barely heard from him.
No idea how they're going to look. And the offense, I'm excited to see, because, you know, you got some really nice glimpses of what Justin Fields can be.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're like, okay, we've got a better offensive line and more weapons.
Yeah. And another year of experience under his belt and a full year of experience with Luke Getsy.
That, and you know, it's fun. You know, we talk about Justin Fields running. Is if you watched him run, not last year, the year before, is every time he'd run, you'd be like, why is he not picking up big chunks of yards? He's so fast and so big and strong, but he ran so tentatively.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the beginning of last year, the same thing. It was at one point where it just like, you saw the confidence. You're like, you know what? I can do this. And he ran so much more deliberately, and he outran people instead of, you know, tippy-toeing. And you just saw how much better it made the Bears offense having him, his legs as a weapon. I'm just waiting for that confidence step where he goes, I can throw in this league too. And it might be having a real number one wide receiver, or having a healthy wide receiver core, or could be just having a better offensive line. The fact that you just saw his growth in confidence, and I'm just ready for him to take that third year jump.
Yep. That's what we can hope for.
You know, we saw a big second year jump, different than what we expected it to be, but the fact that he was very, very close to breaking the all-time quarterback rushing record in that second year says something. It really does. That is not an easy feat to do.
No.
What he did on the ground, especially behind a bad offensive line on a bad team. And teams knew what was coming, and they still couldn't stop it.
Yeah, he weaves around them.
What happens when a team can't just gear up to stop you on the ground?
Hopefully, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. Now we just need to, Justin Fields to squat 400 pounds or 600 pounds or whatever. And so we can pick up every single one of those fourth and ones and third and ones.
That's easy, right? Simple. That's all we got to do.
I hated that stupid Eagles 1 yard push. Like, it was like cheat mode. It was really like a cheat mode. Like, there's no way to stop that.
Oh, it was frustrating as hell. But you know what? It was good for us in the long run, right?
All right. Should we talk a little baseball here?
Sure.
Which team do you want to talk first?
Well, I'll just kind of lead into it here. Very sucky, yucky loss by the Cubs today, 11-1 of the Twins. But you know, at least getting blown out, you don't feel that same frustration you do when you lost all those close games. Because listen, you can look at these close losses for the Cubs in a number of ways. It frustrates the hell that you couldn't get those big hits and have a better record. But the fact that every game you've played in, except like up to today, outside of a small handful, all these games have been competitive. So I think it's a good sign for your future. It's just frustrating when you lose so many of these games. You don't want to be looking back in September and think about what could have been, but at least they're competing, right?
Yeah, it's on the one hand, you're right. It's they're being super competitive, especially for a team that just doesn't have a lot of power.
Right.
They're competitive. You know, we bitched about this for the last several years, that so many of the Cubs runs, such a high percentage of the Cubs runs were based on home runs. And now they're not. They're driving in runs the old fashioned way, getting guys and runners in scoring position and hitting singles, doubles, walking guys home. Like they're manufacturing runs without the home run, and which is good, but at some point you need that power. And you know, I think that's why you sort of have to keep Morel up. He adds a little bit of power to that lineup.
That tank he hit on Friday, which was a very good game for the Cubs, that was awesome.
You know, that adds some power to your lineup, and that's really what you need. Other thing is the bullpen, super spotty.
Yeah.
And I want to preface this by saying I don't want to put too much blame on this, but David Ross needs to get it fucking together.
Well, you know, I think that there's a number of ways you can look at the David Ross needs to get it together thing. I'm more frustrated personally with some of the lineup decisions, which I'll get to in a minute, but
that's part of it.
What's disappointing is that Fulmer and Boxberger haven't been the guys you had hoped for when you brought them in. Now, Fulmer's been pitching better recently. Boxberger, not so much. I mean, those are supposed to be two of your back guys, and they just aren't playing well. What frustrated me in terms of pitching decisions against the Cardinals, Javier Assad was awesome, but I felt like he pushed him to his limit, and then it all fell apart in the ninth inning. I thought, okay, he pitched like five innings, whatever. Bring in somebody else. I felt like he tried to push him a little too long.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's some pitching management issues and the lineup issues.
It's the lineup and the pinch hitting that drives me nuts.
Yeah, and it's just frustrating. And I wonder what Jed's mindset is about the situation. You're not going to make a change mid-year, period. But I wonder if he looks at David Ross as a long-term solution.
Honestly, I think he's their yes man. I think he's just, I don't, right now, I don't see him going anywhere. And if they finish around 500, he's certainly not going to go anywhere. It would really have to get out of control for that to happen. And I mean, we've left a lot of games on the table. They're like a game under 500 now. They're right at that 500 mark. You could have had so many more games you could have won. But here's what bothers me. And I don't like to pick on him personally because he seems like a great teammate and a great guy. Why are we still doing the Eric Hosmer thing? Why is he DHing?
Yeah.
Why is your DH a guy with a WRC plus of like 70? And a ground ball rate of 60%. Why are we still doing this?
I can't tell you.
Matt Mervis is a little overmatched right now. but he's somebody trying to get experience in the big leagues for the first time. This is a 33-year-old veteran who's been around many years, who's been on the decline for the past 2 or 3 years. You're not trying to find anything with Eric Hosmer. He had a very good career in his age 20s years. He was an all-star. He was a World Series champion. Very nice, solid, respectable ball player for a good 5-6 year run. Not that guy anymore. Hasn't been that guy for several years. Two teams didn't pay him, or paying him because they don't want him on their roster. San Diego included him in the trade to get some of that money off the books. And Boston, despite getting him and picking up some of that stuff, they didn't want to have him on the roster. He's not a productive ball player anymore. He's 33 years old. He hits the ball on the ground. He doesn't drive it anymore. He used to be a 20-30 home run guy. Those days are long gone. He left, what, 6-7 guys on base? That one Cardinal game, Jack Flaherty couldn't find the zone in the first inning. You had a chance to pounce. You had a chance to bury this team. And it's a first pitch swing double play ball. You're throwing away these games with this stuff. You're giving the Cardinals life again with this stuff. I know it's only May. There's a long way to go. A lot could happen. You just don't want to leave all this stuff on the table.
Right. You need to be smarter about the lineup. And you brought in Matt Mervis, brought him up, and you've been playing him. And it hasn't been the offensive output that he, by any stretch, that he showed in the minors. But I would rather have him seeing major league pitching and growing than see Hosmer there. You've got Morel. Rather see Morel have those at bats. Hell, I would even rather see Amaya coming up and getting at bats than Hosmer. He should not be having at bats anymore.
And if Eric Hosmer really is that valuable to the team and the clubhouse, don't start him. Don't put him at your starting DH. There's a situation where you have two in scoring position, nobody out, and you say, okay, Hosmer, we just need you to put the ball in play, then do that. He shouldn't be your starting designated hitter at this point.
Yeah, it's not a good look. And I don't know what the reason for him still playing is. It's not money. He's making the veteran minimum.
From the Cubs. He's making a shit ton of money elsewhere, but the Cubs aren't paying him a big investment. I mean, literally, they brought him in to be like a placeholder.
Yeah. And there's just no need for it. No need.
And, you know, honestly, like, I was never huge on the signing, but I was hoping he'd at least be a little better, where you could kind of ride with, it's like, okay, he's batting like 260 with a 330 OBP. Like, for the first few months of the season, we'll make do. And even the first few games in the season, he hit decently well. But, you know, again, it's like when he gets a lot of these hits, they're 10 bouncers that find a hole.
It's crazy to think that this guy was once a really good baseball player.
Hey,
just,
you know
how quickly he deteriorated.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? What did they say in Moneyball? We can't play the big game anymore. Sometimes we're told at 18, sometimes we're told at 40, but we're all told.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone goes over the hump at some time. And Eric Hosmer, his prime was in his 20s, and you know, since he reaches 30s, he's over the hump now. It happens to everybody. It's the timing's a little different, but yeah, you know, this is the situation for him. Look at Jake Arrieta when he came back. He was washed. Everybody is washed up at some point.
And sometimes it is a gradual thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just, life hits you hard.
I mean, really, it feels like when he went to San Diego is when things really started to decline.
When he got that big contract.
Right, right. Because, you know, he was a very good player for that Royals team. And wasn't it him that went on that ball, that aggressive base running play that tied the game and they eventually won the World Series against the Mets? I believe that was Hosmer.
Might have been. My memory's not that good.
I believe it was. So, you know, he could say he was a key part of a championship, two pennants, and he was an all-star 1 year. And he was a multi-time gold glove winner. Had a nice career. Nothing personal against the guy. But you can't do this anymore. And listen, you can only optimize this team so much. Because there is a ceiling of this team, and it's probably not more than a few games above 500. Because look, Mervis is, there's growing pains here, clearly.
There's big growing pains.
Big growing pains. And who else are you going to bring up right now in terms of position players? Owen Casey's killing it. Pico Armstrong's killing it. There's a bunch of prospects killing it, but they're not ready to come up yet. I mean, really, the optimization of this roster is going to be getting better in some areas. You can bring in all the arms. You can bring up arms. You can find arms. Those are easy. But in terms of position players, unless you're making trades, you can look at a few things. I mean, we've picked on Hosmer enough, but you look around. Obviously, Nico being hurt doesn't help. That really stinks. And Dansby Swanson's obviously good overall, but it's good to have those two in there. Patrick Wisdom's very streaky. Seiya Suzuki is very streaky. And even when Seiya's been hitting well, we need to see more power, right?
Yes.
There's been no power. And maybe part of it's because of that injury. But if he's getting on base and hitting, fine. But we do need a bit more pop. And it's not just on Suzuki. You know, you don't have that power. That's really a big Achilles heel here.
It's like I talked about that when you were out last weekend, is that's a huge factor for the Cubs, is they're doing a lot of good things. They just don't have any power. If you added more power to this team, they could be a really potent offense.
And here's something else I wanted to talk about. There's been talks that the Cubs would like to keep Cody Bellinger around. And I think there's a lot of us that feel like that would be cool based on the way he's played so far. I do think, though, it probably is important for them to see how this plays out over the next few months. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying I think this is going to happen. But what if he does just bottom out again?
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. But he's not that old. He's not that far removed from an MVP season.
No.
And he's playing incredibly well. I think you have to consider that, especially, you know, when you start really looking at guys you have in the minors and coming up. You know, you were dead right. Brennan Davis looks like he's really struggling.
Those injuries killed him, man. It's a shame.
You know, so that's a guy that you expected to come up before the injury. You expected him up this season. And, you know, so you just, those things happen. You have a guy in house that's playing well, is happy here. He's a good teammate and a good leader. And I think it's worth exploring and having those initial conversations. You're right. I would not lock him up early. You want to see how the rest of the season plays out. But I'm very, very open to the idea of him returning.
Oh, me too. I am too. I'm not saying I'm not. I just think that it's, I think that it's just an issue of, hey, we're going to evaluate this and see how it's going, but it's definitely going to be on their minds. And I think that's good. I think that's good.
And you know, we saw the Cardinals early in the week come to town and take 2 of 3 from the Cubs. And despite Wilson Contreras having a good series, you look at the predicament that the Cardinals are in with Wilson Contreras, and you look at the stats of, here's Wilson Contreras. Oh my God, my watch just hears Wilson Contreras starts yelling. You look at the situation they're in, and the pitching staff is a whole lot worse for them. And they're like, yeah, we're just going to stop having Wilson Contreras catch. Wilson Contreras, as Cubs fans, we all knew that if you're paying him and you're giving him a contract, you're doing so for his bat. He's not a good catcher. He's got an arm. He's not a good catcher. And I think I prefer, it's, you know, would I have been opposed to them keeping him and making him the DH? Not at all. But the Yan Gomes catching was the much better decision, and we're seeing so with the progression of the pitching staff.
Well, not only are you seeing it on the field, but you're continually hearing it from the players. They talk about it regularly. Justin Steele talked about it the other night.
This was the right decision, and I'm glad they made it. I still, the way it all went down with him, I still think there's something else that was going on. Maybe they came to him and told him, hey, we would like to keep you as, but you would be a DH or a first baseman. And he didn't want that.
Right.
And then that led to kind of the, I'm not going to say bad blood, but the awkward path that things went down. But he was not the catcher that they wanted to go with. And it, that was the right call. They were like, well, we'll sacrifice offense. And to be honest with you, Yan Gomes has been really good as a hitter.
Yeah. He's hitting over 300. He's got 6 home runs. He returned to the lineup the other day, hit a home run and kind of sparked this team. It was pretty nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, couldn't be happier with the way things are going with Yan Gomes. And you know, the Cardinals seem that they have buyer's remorse with Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes forward, though.
We never know, but that isn't to say that 2 months into the season of that brand new contract, if that is not an awkward way to start things, to say the least.
Definitely awkward. No doubt.
That is, you know, you hear some Cardinals writers talk about it and you're like, listen, I don't know what the Cardinals' expectations were. Did they think that, I mean, as much as I don't like him, Yadier Molina was one of the best defensive catchers we've seen in our lifetimes. And
yes,
the man,
yeah, hate to admit it, but yes.
Yeah, he was just fantastic at it. And bringing in Wilson Contreras to replace him was just not the right move. Just two completely different players. And, you know, I think the Cardinals would have been better suited to bring in a more defensive minded catcher to ease that transition from Yadier Molina to where you're going in the future. And I think they just were like, they saw the bat of Wilson Contreras and the fact that they could snake a beloved Cub player. And I don't think they thought it out as well as they could have. And not saying, yeah, I'm not saying it's a disaster as much as they're portraying it, but
they're paying a lot of money for a DH.
They are.
Let's see what other notes we have this week. Justin Steele's really good.
Yes, he is. He's awesome. And even when he doesn't have his best stuff, he goes out there and grinds and still gets results.
Yeah, I'm really happy with him.
I love that dude.
Smiley just continues to pitch really well. Stroman, who I figured he was gone, but apparently they're talking about contract extension with him.
Well, I mean, you know, he's been really good so far this year. I mean, him and Steele have been a really nice 1-2 punch so far. And what's a shame about Stroman is how little run support he gets. But either way, the results are the results, and he's pitching very, very well.
I think he's been one of the pitchers that benefited from the pitch clock.
Yeah, the rhythm looks great with him. I mean, really, really smooth. Like, we even saw on opening day, he might have been the first ever to get the pitch clock violation, but everything else, he was in a good rhythm, and he stayed in that rhythm.
Let's see. I don't know if you've been following the minors, but Ben Brown is pitching really well.
Nasty. Nasty. Him and Jordan Wicks both look really good.
Really good. Ryan Jensen has been moved to a reliever role, which I'm fine with. And I think the fact that there's so much pitching prospect in, you know, between prospects and young players on this team, I think the well is pretty full. So being able to make that move early is kind of a benefit there. But I there's some good things going on. Miguel Amaya, a cup of coffee, but he got promoted to the AAA. He got a promotion in his demotion. I liked what I saw Miguel Amaya.
What I really liked about Miguel Amaya was how well the pitchers seemed to work with him.
That energy he brought. He was somebody we were very high on, and injuries took a big toll for a number of seasons. And I was almost ready to write him off. And now I would venture to say that the Cubs organization had that in their mind too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now looking like Miguel Amaya could be the future of the Cubs catching, foreseeable future. That's not such a bad thing to have your guy in house.
No, it's not. I mean, if the fact that those two were working together, you know, you look at what Steele was doing with Miguel Amaya. I mean, no walks, command looked great, communication looked there. That's big. The fact that you can establish that right off the bat, that's big.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm very happy. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the Cubs. This was good. And, you know, even though he got sent back down when Yan Gomes came back,
kind of knew it was coming either way.
Yeah. And it's a tough situation because I've heard people say, well, you know, why not get rid of Tucker Barnhart? And I don't disagree, but Miguel Amaya is young. He needs those at bats. He needs to be playing. And
they're not going to be that quick to cut a veteran catcher. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah. Truth. And you're not benching Yan Gomes in,
God, no.
So you've got to give him playing time. They moved him up to AAA. He's going to be playing with Iowa. And the reality is if Yan Gomes goes down again, they'll probably bring Amaya up to play regularly. And that's good for him to continue to get at bats.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I like where things are going with this organization.
Yeah, as a whole, I mean, there's been a lot of frustrating moments over the past few weeks, but at least you could look at the long-term picture and you could see some promising things.
And here's the thing about the frustration, and I agree with you. There's been quite a few frustrating things, but it's, I thought about it, and a lot of the frustration is based on newfound expectations of this team.
Which is true.
Is you look at it and you were like, early on, you were like, okay, you know, they're going to be better than last year. But didn't have a lot of hope about this team. But you saw what they're capable of doing. The starting pitching is pretty darn good. They've got a number of guys up and down the order that can hit, you know, get on base and get hits. You just identified, hey, you know, where they need bullpen help and they need more power. Those are their weaknesses. But other than that, it's a pretty good team. The chemistry is really good. You know, you like a lot of things about this team, and you get a much better feel now on when they're playing a few weeks into the season than you did on paper going into the season. And so when things don't go as you hoped, even that a bad game or a bad pitching outing, you still look and you're like, man, I'm frustrated. But would I have been the same frustration level last year when they're like, this is a bad team and I have no expectations? No. A lot of my frustration is I expect more because I believe in this team.
Because you believe they're capable of more.
Yes. And, you know, today really sucked because I for the most part, I've really liked Wesneski as a pitcher. And
it seemed like he was making progress from his bad start, and then things kind of went south again.
And, you know, we're gonna see ups and downs. He's a young kid, but I would like to see a little more consistency from him. And, you know, I want to see where is that nasty stuff that he was throwing in spring training.
Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, spring training, it was he lights out.
But I mean, overall, you know, and Horner's injured, which sucks. I don't know the prognosis. They put him on the 10-day, but I don't know if it's really a 10-day or if it's a 10-day and observe.
I think it's 10 days starting last Tuesday.
You know, you need his bat back in the lineup. But overall, I mean, I think I like this team. I like this team quite a bit. And you look at the division, and I still don't understand. The Pirates are starting to come back to earth and figure out that they're the Pirates. And the Brewers are starting to come back to earth.
They just won two in a row now, but they're playing the Royals.
Yeah. But the Brewers are 3-7 in their last 10. You know, this division is still open. This division is still wide open.
Yeah. It is. It is.
Should we talk about the White Sox?
All right.
This team is a disaster. You looked, you're like, okay, you know, they started poorly, but they had a pretty rough schedule going into this. You're like, okay, we've got a lot of games against the Royals coming up. That can really start padding our stats and get some wins under our belts. And in a 4-game stretch against Kansas City, you lost 3 of 4. You're only 1 game ahead of the Royals who are one of the worst teams in baseball.
Yeah, you're, losing that series to the Royals was not good.
You are 13 and 27 right now.
14 and 27. They just beat. They just beat the Astros.
Oh, okay. All right.
So there's that.
Yeah, but you're basically you're winning a third of your games. That's not good. That's not good at all. You know, you've got still got injuries. Your ace pitcher that you rely on just had an absolute clunker on Monday against Kansas City. Lance Lynn had a clunker against Kansas City.
Yeah, the things have been ugly for Lance Lynn so far, and you're going to need him to turn it around if you have any sort of hope, but he just turned 36, and you know, when you're throwing 91, 92 down the middle, you're not putting the movement to location or any sort of deception on it. It's going to get hit hard, and the Royals did just that against him.
And, you know, Benintendi's been fine, but just zero power. Zero power. He's slugging, like, his OBP and his slugging are the same. Like, it's not a good look. You know, Tim Anderson is back, but Andrew Vaughn is not swinging the bat particularly well.
At least he's hitting with men in scoring position fairly decently.
This team, I don't know where to go from here.
I mean, the one things I can give is Luis Robert's been hitting great lately. Lucas Giolito has looked really, really good. And Yoan Moncada's back, and he had a good night tonight, helped lead them to a win. But, you know, Grandal's injured again. You know, Tim Anderson is still trying to get back to the swing of things. Because I wonder if his injury is still bugging him a little bit. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the Eloy appendectomy, that's just more crazy crap, bad luck for him. And you got to feel for the guy.
Yeah, you do feel bad. He's going to be out a while.
Yeah.
That's one of those injuries that not, I don't know if you call that an injury, it's a situation where if you come back too early, you risk further injury.
Right.
You've gotta take the time to really, really heal. So he's gonna be out a while. And you know, some of the young guys that you foolishly were counting on just haven't been producing and got sent down. You know, the crazy part is you look at the flaws on this team, and they're not flaws that should shock anybody. They were the flaws that all of the fans said, oh yeah, here are the flaws. Can you fix these, please? And the White Sox just sat on it. And we're like, nah, we're good.
And well, I think one of the, yeah, I mean, especially when you don't have depth right now.
Yeah, you don't have depth. You don't have, you know, you lack help. Your bullpen's terrible. And
hopefully Liam Hendricks comes back and helps that a little bit.
Well, I'm hearing he might be back in like a week or two.
And he's throwing real hard. And, you know, I don't know, maybe that's a little bit of a morale boost for people. Maybe that charges people up a little bit.
I mean, it should.
It absolutely should. Your teammate just beat cancer.
You're like, hey, I beat cancer. I'm coming back here and I'm going to dominate. I'm going to make this bullpen better.
Because if he is a reliable closer, that makes things better for you.
Yes, because you take away an inning that you have to
give to Ronaldo Lopez.
You know, I have rooted. So I've been like one of the biggest cheerleaders for Ronaldo Lopez for years. And I just think I have to hang up my pennant and my, you know, my cheering section horn. He's not the guy.
And he was good last year, and I thought he was going to be really good out of the pen this year, but it's been disastrous so far this year.
You know, there's been glimmers of hope, but overall, you're just like, what the hell? You know, there's this team is bad, and it's weird to see Kenny Williams act like I'm really frustrated. I'm pissed off. Like, look in the mirror. Do you not have a mirror in your office? You are the guy. You helped create this. Like, you know, imagine how frustrated we are. We have no control over this situation. You have control.
Yeah.
You know, it's Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, and ownership. That they're the ones that they have no room to be frustrated, because this is, they're reaping what they sowed. Like, this is the team you put together. We all saw the flaws. We all been for the last several years telling you where you should improve, and they're just not willing to do it. Not willing to do it.
It feels like they're continuing to let them get hope because they play in one of the most embarrassing divisions in sports. Like, you know what's crazy? The White Sox are 14-27, just beat the Astros, so now they have 14 wins. Their winning percentage is .341. You would think a team with a record like that would be 12, 13 games back, right?
Mm-hmm.
8.5. I mean, I'm not saying they're right there, but that's not miles back for a team with that record. I just think that's crazy, right?
This division is not very good.
It's more than not very good. It's a train wreck. The Twins are the only team above 500, and we're in mid-May now. And they're barely above 500. They're like 4 games above 500. Cleveland is under 500. The Tigers are under 500. The White Sox are under 500. And the Royals are under 500. The Royals have a .300 winning percentage. They have 12 wins and they're 10 back. The Athletics only have a few less wins than them. They're 16 back. What does that tell you about that? The Red Sox are 22-18, a .550 winning percentage. They're last place in the AL East and 7.5 back of the Rays. They are one game closer to first place than the White Sox with an above 500 record. But see, this is where you look at the situation. What if the White Sox do get hot? Then they're going to look like they're right there again. So then what do? Do you stand pat again? I don't know how much you can buy. Right? I mean, these are all questions you have to ask, right?
Right.
Because they could go on a run and make it closer. I know people roll their eyes at that, but if you get Liam Hendricks back and Tim Anderson starts hitting again, and if Yoel Moncada could actually stay on the field and hit like he has been, you can win more games. But if you were in any other division, you would already be buried. But in this division, they're not. And that's going to be something that Rick Hahn is going to say, well, look, we're still within striking distance. So how are they going to approach this? These are just the questions I'm trying to ask here.
It's at this point, do you see any remedy, not short term, long term, any remedy working that doesn't involve transfer of ownership?
At the very least, I would have to say major decision, major changes within the organization, or the very, you know, the small chance that they actually do turn this around this year. It's going to be one of those two.
Because
Sean, I'm going to pound this like a drum. This division is the only reason that there is even a crack of the window still open this year. Right?
Absolutely.
If they were in the AL East.
Oh my God. If they were in the AL East, so the team in last place in the AL East would be tied for first in their division.
Exactly.
They would be like 16 and a half games out of first. It's just
that would be over.
It would be over.
Done. That would be 100% over. This
AL West, they're at the bottom, you know, other than the Oakland, they would be well at the bottom and no hope of getting to the top. NL East, they'd be at the bottom, no hope of getting to the top. NL Central, they'd be at the bottom with minimal hope to get to the top. And the NL West, they'd be at the bottom with no hope of getting to the top. Like, you're right. This division is the only thing keeping them any hope alive. And what if the Twins go on a big winning streak and start putting this division away? Then what do you say? Because you have no hope of a wild card,
right? You have the Sox have to come back and win the division if they want the postseason.
Yeah, you have to win this division. Have to. There's no chance of you winning a wild card at this point, or not at this pace.
Right. You have to win this awful division.
Yeah.
And it may not look likely right now, but it's not impossible. Again, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying that, but.
Yeah. But right. As of right now, you are 9 games out of the wild card and you would have to leapfrog 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams.
That's tough to do.
That's really tough to do.
Well, you know, Sean, the other thing about the AL Central is take away the Twins for a second. Cleveland has really fallen back down to earth from last year.
Yeah.
But if they get healthier, maybe they'll play a little better. But that offense isn't very good. And the Tigers are playing better, but I think by the end, they're going to be right there with 90-some losses.
The Tigers are not good. And they're going to sell off anything that they can. And the Royals are just, they're bad.
Because my whole point of this is I think that Jerry and the team is going to be really hesitant to sell off if they're within arm's length of this, because don't factor in how the team has played. If you just look in May and you're 8.5 back, that's not over. It's difficult, but it's not over. Now, people could look at how the White Sox have played and have very little faith, and I would understand why to this point, but it's just one of those things where this team should not be this bad, right? They have their flaws. They have their problems, but they shouldn't be this bad. And that's why
on paper, this should be a much, much, much better team.
Right. And that's why there's that part where you say, what if they do rip off 8 of 9 wins? You could get right back into it. But do you feel like that's going to sustain over a season? Where's the confidence level in that? The organization, I think, is going to try to milk that for much as they can. I think they're trying to avoid selling off as much as they can. But, you know, this is just, I don't know. It's very, very strange. You know, all my Sox fan friends, they've given up. And I've been kind of like, well, let's see. And we'll see where this is in a month. If they're within five games in a month, the White Sox are going to try to, I think, in my opinion, not sell off, right? Like five games is within reach, especially in the shit division. But I don't know where this is going to go from here. I don't know. Can you build off this win tonight against the Astros? Can you say, hey, Moncada Robert came up big, build off that? Can you say when Liam Hendricks comes back, that's going to be a big morale boost for this team and maybe start playing a little better? We'll see.
You know, we keep saying all these things with the White Soxes. Maybe this is the boost they need. Maybe when Tim Anderson comes back, maybe when the schedule gets easier and they're playing the Royals.
Right.
And
we say it a lot.
Every time we say that, it doesn't come true. And I think this team might be cooked. It's May 13th. We're recording this. I think it might be time to say the White Sox are cooked. And that's a shitty thing to have to say with a team that has so many good hitters and pitchers that have had such a good, you know, career so far. And it's tough to say that, but that's really where we are.
Yeah. And again, one of the reasons I continue to do the what ifs is because this division is so bad. Because if you were 16 games back and you had like every team ahead of you in the AL East, even if you ripped off like a big winning streak, you still wouldn't be in the cards. These all these teams in the AL Central absolutely suck. The Twins are the best team and they're mediocre at best, in my opinion. Good pitching, but their offense is meh. I think the Twins are like an 85 win team. Might be enough to win the division, but they're not going to go anywhere in the post. I don't think they're that good. They're a mediocre team. And if they go on a losing streak and the White Sox go on a winning streak, you know, again, I'm playing all hypotheticals. I'm just saying this stuff isn't out of realm of possibility with a division this bad.
It's a shitty situation.
It is. It is a very, 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 it's been a very, very shitty situation. And it's, you know, for the fans, very frustrating. Very, very, very frustrating.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.